Hello, and you're listening to Eco Justice Radio. We present environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Welcome, I'm Jack Eid. On today's show, the wild after wildfire, evolving our response to fire. Host Carrie Kim will be interviewing Maya Khosla, wildlife biologist, writer, poet, and filmmaker. Maya Khosla, working in collaboration with other scientists, investigated the post-fire regeneration of giant sequoias. As Sonoma County Poet Laureate, between 2018 and 2020, she brought Sonoma's communities together to heal through gatherings, field walks, and shared writing after the wildfires that struck those communities. After surveying forests of the Sierra Nevada, she created a short documentary film, Searching for the Gold Spot, about wild places that experienced rejuvenation, supporting high biodiversity after wildfire where they are not logged. Her work has been featured in For the Wild and in the film Elemental Reimagine Wildfire. We begin with a clip from Maya Khosla's film, Searching for the Gold Spot, The Wild After the Wildfire.
An ancient force continues to shape our forests of the American West. Generations of life linked to fire for eons. Post-fire forests are increasingly rare because they are routinely removed by logging operations. To study life after wildfire, teams of biologists are venturing through our national forests.
So I just kind of wanted to show you. Now we're in the subplot. We're actually heading further into it.
Well, Robbie just came out with a...
They will compare burned forests with those that have not experienced fire in recent times.
Yeah.
Their work is to search for another rare bird. The black-backed woodpecker. Black-backed woodpeckers were once common in the Sierra Nevada Cascades region. They have recently been petitioned for listing as a bird to be protected by the Endangered Species Act.
Aloha, this is Carrie Kim. Listeners, today we welcome wildlife biologist, writer, poet, and filmmaker Maya Khosla on the show to help us better understand fire and how we create intimacy with the landscape of fire. Fire is on the hearts and minds of many, especially locals, given the recent Eaton and Palisades fires, among others, in recent years. Maya Khosla joins us to ruminate aloud and share her experiences documenting and writing about fire ecology and post-fire forests, as well as the caveats of how we respond to fire and the potentialities. Often the post-fire forest is cleared for logging, even when the trees are still alive, with potential to thrive and serve biodiversity. After fire, what remains? Do we kill what is still alive, or do we embrace fire as a catalyst, ushering in life and biodiversity to the ecosystem? Wildfires and urban fires are urging us to transform our behaviors and relationship to fire. Do we fear fire or respect it? How are we contributing to the emergence and intensity of fires? What should our response to fire be? What is our responsibility to fire and the many living beings who thrive in its wake? Indigenous peoples and the earth have evolved with fire for countless eons. Now is the time for modern humans to rediscover our interdependence with fire, to align with fire and forests for the benefit of life. May we heighten our awareness, open our eyes and hearts, and support nature as it organically evolves. We thank the Tongva ancestors for their continuing presence, legacy, and stewardship of this region. Our show comes to you from the ancestral homelands of the Tongva and all of their relatives. We invite you to go beyond land acknowledgments to action. Volunteer on Indigenous restoration projects, donate to Indigenous causes and the Land Back movement, reach out to local tribal councils and see how to help and uplift Indigenous peoples wherever you live. Welcome, Maya. We are so grateful for your voice and presence on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are so thrilled to have you sharing your lived wisdom, your wonderment and perspectives on fire and fire ecology. And I think this will be a life-affirming show after everything that people have gone through here in our region, in a way that respects and helps us understand the wants of nature. So, you know, I wanted to open with a quote from you in the film Elemental: Reimagine Fire. Once fire goes through, people just assume nothing is there, that it is destroyed. But that's not true at all. It's like waves upon waves of new life coming in. I love that quote from you. It was amazing. It was perfect. It was like right after, we were still in the fires actually, but you know, I wonder if you could elaborate on this for anyone who might be in that bleakness and that state of kind of death versus life after fire moves through, just the way they are seeing the world.
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of my experience of fires and post-fire explorations has been in the Sierra Nevada and also in my home county, which is Sonoma County. In both places, what I've seen is astounding, but gradual. So in the first few weeks, you don't really see too much other than the ash-laden ground and charred trees. And of course, some completely unburned areas. This is typical of fire. It skips around. And there's some havens that stay completely, sometimes closer to creeks, drainages, lakes, ponds. Those areas are a little wetter. And fire sometimes just skips over them and leaves them as these integrally the same habitats. But then other areas are very, very charred. The very first stages when I say waves and waves and waves of life is if I'm thinking about giant sequoias or Sequoia sempervirens, there's little green leaves that start poking out of the trees. It's called epicormic branching or flushing in the case of some trees, which means that they literally flush with green. They're literally bringing their nutrients back in with the help of their leaves if they need it. They need food. So they put out these leaves really quickly. It starts happening within the first few months. And then after one rainy season, it's in full swing. In the case of the totally charred trees, the beetles fly in. They got smoke detectors, antennae, they fly in. And so that's that wave that's not really seen that much. They fly in, they lay their eggs. It's all very quiet. The eggs, the larvae hatch out and they start boring, wood boring beetle larvae, bore into the into these standing dead trees, which are called snag trees, sometimes stag trees. I love that. Stag trees, you know, it sort of gets that, you get that impression of all these branches.
Sure. The shapes.
Right, the shapes. And then after that, the next wave is the woodpeckers that come in after the food, which is the larvae, the beetle larvae, the bark larvae, and the wood-boring larvae, which are bigger. And so you hear this tapping all over the trees. There's an art museum here in Petaluma, Sonoma County, that reflects on these burnt forests. And I asked one of the artists, have you ever heard that tap, 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 tap? She said, yes. Those are the woodpeckers. Because sometimes they're hard to see. They're so camouflaged.
Right.
And the following wave is a lot of the predators. Whether it's, you know, the owls, it'll be the weasels that are really fast movers, the martens, the fishers, they're all weasels. And the smaller short-tailed, long-tailed weasels. And of course, then, of course, when there's small mammals on the ground digging holes, and then there's going to be your bobcats, mountain lions, bears.
Right.
deer come in to forage on the fresh new growth that's happening. So it's just, it's a, like a wake-up call. It's a reset button, if you will,
mm-hmm.
for us to try to reset itself, to start mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
And everything responds.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, maybe you could speak a bit about your movie, In Search of the Spot of Gold. It seems a perfect segue to that film, your short film.
Yeah, thanks. About 2014, I started surveys in post-fire forests from all the way up in Lassen, all the way, which is the northern California, all the way down south to Sequoias, which is the mountains that are much closer to where you are in LA. Mm-hmm. And those forests had one quintessential factor, which was that they were recent burns, the first, mm-hmm. you know, maybe first 8-9 years after a fire, sometimes 2 years after a fire.
Uh-huh.
And we were surveying for black-backed woodpeckers. And I just thought my own first impression was total reluctance about getting in there because it looked like a very stark landscape, not mm-hmm. really supporting new life,
right.
not at all.
Right.
And so I thought, I can't understand what we will really find here. Well, right. within days,
uh-huh.
I was sort of taking my words back because mm-hmm. the very first day of the surveys, we found a black-backed woodpecker and we found her nest.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, so these dead trees are houses, basically. They're
right.
housing complexes for the wild. And thereafter, I followed other surveyors led by two of the scientists, mm-hmm. Dr. Chad Hansen and Tanya Chi, mentors and sort of leaders in these surveys, very, very dedicated to how do you find the blackback? How do you mm-hmm. find the secret? You have to be very patient. You can't really just like chase it. You have
right.
to be, you have to kind of walk. I mean, if you start running, you kind of lose it
yeah.
because it's flying. So it's
yeah.
going to be a winner every time.
Sure.
So you just sit still and figure out kind of mm-hmm. which way it's going, especially if it has something in its beak. If it has food in its beak, you're made. Because
mm-hmm.
if it's not eating it, that means it's delivering it.
Mm-hmm.
Either it'll be delivering to a mate, it
mm-hmm.
could be, or two very young black-back woodpecker chicks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we find the nest. And you, if you've seen the black-back searching for the gold spot, the wild after wildfire, you'll see a lot of people, as soon as they start playing the caller, which is part of the protocol, and the bird comes and checks you out, who is this, you know? Protocol says that he'll probably go back to his nest if he's nesting. And the male, females also quite, both of them are very territorial. They'll fly back to the nest and they think that, you know, you can't see them because they're just so blended in and they're not used to somebody following them. You keep a little distance, in fact, quite a distance. And birds are, you know, differently tolerant. Sometimes they're very shy in the sense that, oh gosh, if they see you
right.
anywhere
right.
within 50 feet, then they
right.
get nervous.
Uh-huh.
And other birds, if you just sit tight, sit really quiet and small, maybe 50 to 75 feet away, yeah, they just sort of look, treat you as part of the background and you're not going to, this is some small bear, you know,
mm-hmm.
just sort of grooming itself. And they just don't, I don't know what they're thinking, but I'm assuming if you're super still and quiet and low to the ground, the logic is you're not moving, so they're fine. And so this was a wonderful experience of finding these beautiful habitats. And then, of course, the fact that these beautiful habitats are treated the way I treated them the way I first saw them, which is, nope, they're not beautiful and they're wastelands and nothing's going to happen here and we need to log them.
Right.
So that is the vast majority of beliefs right now. One, we need to log them because otherwise they'll burn up again. Or two, we need to log them because when they regrow back, they will burn up again. So either way, these burn forests don't have a status as forests. They're kind of like the pariahs of the forests, if you will. So that was
not to the living beings who inhabit it, right? So that's the thing, is whose priority is it?
Yeah. And actually since that time I found so much more than the black-backed woodpeckers and on the other birds that are shown in the film.
Well, the film is an amazing testament to life in the forest, like you say, in the post-fire forest. And I wonder if you could speak about then segue to your other film, The Monster, talking about what happens with the clear cutting and the thinning and the responses to fire to this landscape that people assume is dead or bleak and not quote unquote useful except for creating biomass. And maybe you could speak more about The Monster.
So I got there's a small clip online. It's called Monster on the Horizon. And of course, for short, I do call it Monster, just like what because it's like Monster, what? Ooh, yeah. And it came from one of the interviews with Gary Hughes, Biofuel Watch. And he just said, look, the funny thing, well, it's not funny. It would have been funny if it was a joke or a cartoon. It's actually real. These trees are chewed up into either pellets or chips and then just thrown into a furnace as if they're coal and then burned up. And so that's their fate. They live to be burned, or they are standing dead trees to be burned. And so he says it's just like a hungry monster because, it just never ends. It's all about feeding the monster. The secondary task is managing the forest. The managing the forest becomes a servant to feeding the monster. The monster is the one that's more.
Yeah. The monster of consumption and electricity and energy, right?
Yes. And that's a new thing. I mean, it's been around for a while in California that people, trees for electricity, only because the logic is that when an industry is processing for laminated wood or 2x4s or whatever, other products, then they have the waste material, they burn it in order to power themselves. So that might have been the start of it. It was years ago, but then it amplified and now it's got all these subsidies and now it's grown into this very hungry monster, possibly, which is called the Golden State Natural Resources Project, which is where, Dr. Shea Wolf and Gary and Matt Holmes and Gloria Alonso Cruz were featured, that small film, because they were all talking about the shock of experiencing people thinking about extracting 1 million tons of acres of forest per year out of yeah. It sounds
out of these, what are these snag forests, right? Which is what you're talking about, harboring all this life and regenerating the ecosystem.
That,
in Oregon, Nevada, and California, correct?
Yes. And also they will be taking a mix of dead and live trees. They'll take a lot of live trees too.
Yeah. So that movie was very disturbing to witness because I had no idea about it. I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that these trees that are still living are being turned into, not always, but I guess it depends how you define dead or living tree. I mean, right? A person could have that perception, but it is still living. Or I don't know, how would you really define? We know that there is actually such a thing as a dead tree that's not going to actually live again.
Yes. So the standing dead trees, the stags, trees that are really dead, the woodpeckers and the other related birds, owls, nuthatches, chickadees, etc. They know it because those are the ones that are typically easier to dig into. So that's where the homes are built. And so what actually happens is there are some snatchers, like sometimes a woodpecker has dug his nest and swallows come in, or even starlings, sadly, or another woodpecker will come in, ooh, I like this. I'm taking over. I'm bigger than you. So that happens too. So it's really many, many different. And in fact, I've even seen documented Pacific fisher, which is a large weasel. This big, probably about the size of a raccoon or something. It snatched the pileated woodpecker old cavity and then came snarling out when the woodpecker came back to the cavity. So everyone wants them. And that's the dead trees.
So would you say the right advocacy for the trees and the snag forest is to just leave them alone to decompose naturally in accordance with nature's cycles?
Absolutely. Yeah. The snag forests, at the very least, people need to leave wide expanses alone just to make sure to see the diversity, to experience that, just to understand it a little better. They're not even understood when they're logged. And also to see whether or not they experience fire the same way the next time around, because there's this idea that they'll just burn up in the fire, but they actually burn very similarly to, you know, live trees. So just the idea of a clear cut after fire, it just seems so misplaced. It's sort of like the management is really behind, far behind the science. The science is like, you know, jogging ahead, full speed, and discovering all these things. But the management is sort of plodding along pretty 10 to 20 years behind. So, and then there's the live trees, you know, there's thinning out live trees, which is happening, you know, right next to all the standing dead. You'll be, ooh, but those are alive. But you know what? They don't look healthy. We'll take them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's more just industry. Would you say it's more of a profit-driven motive than an actuality? Because I know you said it's actually the way the trees are thinned, it's actually more destructive than it is beneficial to the ecosystem.
Yes, they're killing a whole lot more trees. Actually, the amount of trees that are killed is more than the tree killed from fire itself. You know, it's just, it's so much right now. There's huge numbers killed. And so it's definitely industry and it's definitely profit, but it's also subsidies. Mm-hmm. It's government-based. Yes, government-based subsidies are sort of feeding it, because otherwise biomass industry, it's not necessarily going to stand on its own feet without the subsidies.
Subsidies, got it.
Yeah.
Maya, we're going to take a break right here and come back to talk more about what happens in the post-fire forest for good and for ill. So we'll be right back, listeners.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying EcoJustice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps or visit our website at ecojusticeradio.org to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, and get connected with us on social media. Today, you're listening to The Wild After Wildfire, Evolving Our Response to Fire, with host Carrie Kim and guest Maya Khosla, wildlife biologist, writer, poet, and filmmaker.
This is a clip from Regeneration After Fire, Conversations with Dr. Chad Hansen, author of Smokescreen by Maya Khosla.
Fire does not destroy the forest. Fire restores forests. The first spring after the fire, and for many springs after that, you see a complete transformation. And an enormous density of natural conifer regeneration.
And there's very, very little mortality of these conifers.
Fire-killed trees then fall and become down logs. Native shrubs germinate. All these things create very, very important habitat for wildlife.
So my question is, why are we still suppressing backcountry fires? Why are we doing these post-fire logging operations at huge expense to taxpayers based upon these misrepresentations that these areas don't regenerate with conifers? The fact is that fire is not destroying the forests, but logging sure is.
So, Maya, I don't know if there's anything more you would like to say about how we change what's happening. How do we cultivate more respect for the snag forest and educate people so that this logging industry and the biomass industry is not just kind of taking place on our watch?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be like this critical mass of awareness.
Maya, thank you so much for joining us today. I would love for you to close with one of your poems related with fire, whatever you feel is appropriate.
Yeah. Now you can set down your fears. A sweep of brightness raises the mountaintops from sleep. As if on cue, a rush of breath answers the stuff of ages. The essentials, lands and gurgling waters, awakened by silences, rising once the flames have fallen. Now you can set down your fears. You can see the tribes arriving. Sprig by sprig, the forests unwrapping layers of light. The old and the new, shoulder to shoulder. Ambers, reds, and greens, following internal instructions. Lily, lupin, conifer, marking time. Now the wild ones, with inner eyes drawing from the Pleistocene, arriving with the disposition of their ancients, mice, owls, foxes yipping, lines of pilgrims with the training, the shape and scent of paths, mapped out. Now the mule deer, the lions, all along, they knew to arrive.
Beautiful. I love it. I love to hear about all of our relatives because they, you know, in all of this fire talk, they get forgotten. Yeah, all of the living beings of the forest. Could you share some of the links where people can find your films, find your writings, your poetry, just keep up with your projects?
I have a website, mayakosla.com, and there's films, Monster on the Horizon and Peche are two films that are on Vimeo that just have these long names. And I do have Elemental is something I highly recommend because primarily because there's a lot of heart in that film. And there's a lot of concepts, a lot of, you know, heady concepts like what to do and all that. But there's just a lot of heart in that film as well. And then Searching for the Gold Spot, if you can find it online, it's the easy one. If you type Searching for the Gold Spot, The Wild After Wildfires is my first documentation of post-fire, the beauty and life of post-fire forests.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I highly recommend that one because it helps people remember. I mean, the woodpecker is so beautiful. And just the way you capture the face. I mean, we really need to respect these ancestors, you know. And some of us have never seen them. And so it's so beautiful to see what happens in the snag forest. Yeah, the owls. It's really wonderful. Thank you so much, Maya, for your work and for bringing this other perspective and reminding us that of the beauty of fire and the sacredness of fire. And I think that's something that we all need to remember and to have that perspective coming in and a remembrance that we have always lived with fire. And it's a matter of coming back into balance with it.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website at ecojusticeradio.org and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, The Wild After Wildfire, Evolving Our Response to Fire. Thank you to our guest, Maya Kosla. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal 350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You've been listening to Eco Justice Radio, project of SoCal 350. Executive producer, myself, Jack Eid, co-host, Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
Going on, family, from the Bay to LA. My name is Kat Brooks. My show Law and Disorder is now on KPFK. Cutting edge interviews with organizers, culture workers, newsmakers, and freedom fighters. The weekly state terror roundup, resistance in residence with artists using their gifts to change the world, and letters from the inside. That's just a small taste of what this show is about as we seek to expose, agitate, and build. Tune in Monday through Thursday at 8 a.m. on 90.7 or at kpfk.org.
Support comes from CAP UCLA, presenting Seth Parker Woods, Julia Bullock, and Connor Hanick on January 15th at the Nimoy. The powerhouse musicians unite for an evening that showcases Titan composers of lyricism and storytelling from the 20th and 21st centuries. Together, the musicians perform the works of George Walker, Nina Simone, and more. More information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org. Thank you.
Hi, this is Kurt Elling. You're listening to KPFK 90.7.